You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
This is Jonathan Ryan. I'm one of the co-founders of Sick Pilgrim, the online community that's sweeping the nation. Well, maybe not the nation. Maybe two-fourths of the nation? One-fifth? One-tenth? I don't know. But here we are on the first episode of the Traveling Medicine Show here on Breadbox Media. And as I said, my name is Jonathan Ryan. I'm one of the co-founders of Sick Pilgrim. My co-founder, Jessica Mesman Griffith, maybe on later. We'll see what happens with that. But we started this group of folks known as the Sick Pilgrims. And we started off as a blog, actually. And it's kind of grown to this huge online community and conference and all this stuff that we're going to talk about here in a few minutes. But to give you kind of sort of a vision statement of what we do at Sick Pilgrim, we're for the people who don't feel at home at their local parish, who feel like they are sort of the weirdos, the strange people, the people who don't quite fit into your local button-up, tie-wearing, dress-wearing parish. Or we're for the people who are interested in Catholicism, but don't kind of want to commit to it. So we like to call you people the Catholic curious. Or for all those people who are artists or people who are into strange things, this medicine show is for you. So why did we pick the Sick Pilgrim Traveling Medicine Show? Well, if you're familiar with your American history, and you may not be, if Conan O'Brien and Jay Leno are any indication, the Traveling Medicine Shows, what they would do is they'd go around the country, and they would sell the snake oil that didn't actually heal anything. But to kind of, when they would go to these small towns to get people's attention, they would bring out, you know, all kinds of sideshows. And of course, there are times they had this racist dimension to it. But they would bring in on puppets, and sometimes they bring on the freak shows, and they bring all this stuff to kind of get people's attention, put on one act plays or bits of Shakespeare, just so that people would come and buy their snake oil. Well, we're not exactly selling snake oil, although that may not be such a bad fundraising idea. We'll have to chart that one down for later. Who knows? But that's why we kind of chose the name, the Sick Pilgrim Traveling Medicine Show. It's going to be kind of this collection of interviews, collection of weird stuff, collection of reflections on Catholicism, expressing frustrations with Catholicism. But to be assured, we are faithful Catholics, even as we think the church can be quite weird. Because, and you know what, we don't think that's a bad thing, because we can be pretty weird ourselves, as you're going to see. Speaking of weird, this comes to the first section of our show, which is called The Weird News. Now, a lot of podcasts, a lot of radio shows, a lot of, you know, try to give you the news and the events of the day, whether it's President Trump, whether it's the Middle East, or whether it's crisis going around the world. Well, we figure you've probably had enough of that stuff on Facebook and social media. So we like to bring what we call the weird news, the things that are strange, that are kind of on the hinterlands of our consciousness, and the stuff that we read and kind of go, huh, that's strange, and then don't think about it anymore. Now, I've just spent, to start this section, I don't have a news article to start this particular section, but my weekend was very strange. Jess and I are both writers. That's how we kind of came together to form this whole thing. But I got a request from an agent who had a client who's writing a book on exorcism. Now, in the American Catholic Church, there's nothing that will bring a conversation to a halt quicker than to mention the word exorcism, because a lot of priests, a lot of bishops, and many ordinary, everyday American Catholics don't want to talk about it. because it seems to be a relic of the past. It seems to be very strange. No one really wants to discuss it. And really, let's be honest, who can blame them? Who wants to talk about possession? Because it is a serious topic. It is a very strange topic, and it's something that we don't really want to be reminded about. But so basically, the way this started is I flew to New York this past weekend, and the strangest experience, the person that I'm working with, I'm not going to reveal his name yet until all the ink is dried on the contract, so to speak. But, you know, he lives in a very beautiful, posh, rich part of New York. And he took me to this swanky country club. Now, the country club was founded in 1904, I think. So a lot of illustrious folks had been there. Frank Sinatra and Babe Ruth and some of the old rich people from New York would come to this particular area of Long Island to party during Prohibition. So they tended to hang at this country club from time to time, apparently. And there's nothing stranger than sitting at a table drinking $50 wine and talking about serious cases of exorcism. And what made it so interesting talking with this guy is that it was so such a matter-of-fact conversation. He's very competent, extremely competent in his field, widely respected in his particular field, all across the board. And his degrees are from places you've heard of in the Ivy League, let's put it that way. And it just seemed all very ordinary. And I think that was the thing that was most disturbing about it. It was very, very ordinary. And if he'd been a kook, if he'd been a guy who was telling all these sensationalistic stories, I would have had some kind of safety net of mild skepticism. But I couldn't have it with this man who's now become a friend of mine. And I tell you, it was one of the most surreal weekends I've had in a long time. But it's again, it's a subject that we'll probably talk about more as we move forward here on the podcast, but also something that people just don't want to discuss. So when I say weird news, that's a good way to start to give you kind of a flavor of what we'll be discussing here. Now, this next thing is from an article. It was a few weeks ago, it was May 31st. So to commemorate the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation, which will be, of course, towards the end of October, on October 31st, when all Protestants celebrate the nailing of the 95 Theses to the door, which, of course, started the Protestant Reformation, which split to the church. Now, when I was a Protestant and people would celebrate this, I thought this as a Protestant, not just now as a Catholic, but it always seemed to me to be celebrating a divorce. Celebrating the Reformation was kind of, you know, celebrating a messy, gross, terrible divorce with mom and dad fighting and all the things that go along with that. And so I never understood celebrating it. Now, from a Protestant point of view, it might have been necessary. And even as last few popes have acknowledged that Martin Luther definitely had some good points about the medieval church or the Renaissance church at the time, excuse me. You know, the gleefulness sort of puzzled me. So it's interesting that this evangelical church in the town of Wittenberg decides that they're going to try something a little bit different, and that is they're going to pay money. Well, they basically paid money to build a robot priest to give a blessing. Now, apparently you can go to this church and go and get a blessing from a robot. I don't know what you all think about this particular thing, but it's to get a blessing from a robot seems a little strange to me. I mean, what do? You go in the church, put in your quarters and get an instant blessing from God. And, you know, and you look at the pictures, it was from this particular article that I'm looking at was from Newsweek. And to see this robot kind of, you know, they didn't make it look human-like, so you didn't have that creepiness, you know, as you're going in. But it was this robot with laser fingers and would kind of lean down and give you a blessing and I guess give you whatever blessing is programmed in its circuits. And I don't know if they think that the Holy Spirit will speak through the circuits or it seems weird. Now, as you read in the article, you see that it was sort of a get people to church kind of gag. Hey, this is this novelty. We like to see the church reaching people where they are, right? I'm not sure that people sit around and think, man, if my church just had a robot, I'd go to church more. I don't really know a single person who sits around and thinks that. I guess it's a novelty, I suppose, but to have people to come into church because they can get a robot blessing, just seems a little bit odd to me. Because we Catholics like flesh and blood reality. We are sensual people. And by that, I don't necessarily mean sexual, although we certainly can mean that. But sensual means we like to touch, taste, feel. It's a sacramental in nature. It's flesh and blood. And it's not that we have anything against robots. We all love robots. But when it comes to the ideas of blessing and the touch with the Lord, there's something to be said by getting a blessing from the image of God, which is another human being, of course. So, but it's an interesting discussion. Would you go to a parish that had a robot priest? Now, you might be saying in your head, well, some of my priests could have been mistaken for robots, but that's not the same thing as a robot priest, because at least they have flesh and blood. And, if they had one or two glasses of port, they might turn into less of a robot. But I don't know. Robot priests, I hope that's not the next wave in the American Catholic Church to get people back to Mass. And so let's go on to this next article. Apparently, people are trying to... are going to run tests very soon. Scientists are going to run tests very soon on people to raise them from the dead, I guess through their saying that they're not necessarily brain dead. This article is from the Daily Express, and they're going to go straight to human testing. Now, if you know anything about scientific testing, usually it's done on animals, and a lot of people find that cruel and unnecessary. But usually it's, and in the sense of medical testing, it can obviously be a good thing, although certainly not with things like cosmetics or something silly like that. But in this particular case, they're going to go right to human testing on human brains to see if they can revive the brain. Now, this raises all kinds of interesting questions, doesn't it, of the soul, of will this person's brain be actually... another person? Will it actually be the same person that sort of gets resurrected from the dead, I suppose, is a good way to put it. It creeps me out a little bit because, I'm a huge fan of C.S. Lewis's That Hideous Strength. And if you've ever read the novel, spoiler warning, by the way, there is this hideous thing in the evil, the bad side in their laboratory that is basically a human head, and they keep the head alive with all these scientific instruments. And it's quite a horrifying image, and it's Lewis in his best, to me, That Hideous Strength is one of C.S. Lewis's best works, although least appreciated. But it's this horrifying image of this head talking and gasping and giving commands to his minions, and it's horrifying. So when I see articles like this trying to reanimate the dead and someone's head and someone's brain, I keep going back to That Hideous Strength. Or if you watch the show Futurama, they had all the celebrities with their heads in the jar. my favorite episode is when they were pouring fish food in Leonard Nimoy's head is bobbing up and down trying to get the fish food. But it's sort of a gruesome image, right? This reviving the brain and this fact of just the head and no body and the sort of a disembodiment of human beings. That's a little strange. So that is the weird news. I told you that we were going to get weird on this show, and I certainly meant it. But this next part of our show is called the Pope Francis Conspiracy Minute. Now, if you've been paying attention online, especially on Facebook, and if you follow a lot of the nuttier, crazier right-wing Catholic blogs like The Remnant or the Church Militant or Life News, you'll notice a strand of what I call Pope Francis conspiracy theories. Now, it really makes a lot of Catholics mad, like, you know, normal Catholics, to see this sort of slop on a line. Personally, I find it extremely entertaining. You know, at first it made me mad because, you know, they were sort of saying bad things about the Holy Father, which certainly were not true or extremely exaggerated. And for a while, I got really upset at this. I was like, you know, Pope Francis, his election was what sort of pushed me over into the church. You know, he's showing the love of Christ. You know, you read Joy of the Gospel, you see what his papacy is all about. I mean, how could you not be against that? And sure, he says things sometimes off the cuff and you know, they're a little wrong and whatever. I mean, it happens to all of us. I mean, Pope Francis isn't God, for goodness sake. He's a human being, and he sometimes says things off the cuff that he has to rethink and go back. And you're like, yeah, you know what? Sorry, I didn't quite mean it that way. Have you ever noticed that in the media, too? Like, if someone goes back and corrects what they said earlier, they accuse someone of flip-flopping or whatever. But, you know, sometimes when you get talking, and I'm afraid as I go back and listen to this episode, I might listen to a bunch of things that make me cringe. But you want to go back and sort of correct yourself. And certainly Pope Francis has had to, you know, do that a few times. But you read these Pope Francis conspiracy nut jobs, and you think that Pope Francis is the Antichrist and the Anti-Pope. And you think I'm exaggerating, but do a search, and you will start finding these militant Catholic websites. And you know what? I don't even want to call them Catholics. I just want to call them nut jobs because that's what they are. They are nut jobs. And they have no proof for anything that they're saying. Now, if you are like me and you like, you know, when you're standing in line at the grocery store, instead of looking at my phone, I look at the magazines on the rack. And my favorite one, of course, is News of the World. Now, if you don't know what News of the World is, it is this awesome, crazy newspaper that, you know, people just sit around and make these stories up, but that's part of the fun. You know, they have headlines like Bigfoot had my baby and, you know, the Mothman came in and stole my mother and, you know, that sort of thing. And that's where I consider Life News and Church Militant. It belongs on the tabloid rack, not to be really taken seriously, and sort of deserves to be mocked. Now, as I say all that, sadly, First Things magazine has now joined the realm of tabloid journalism. And I hate saying that because, you know, First Things publishes some amazing stuff. They've had some great articles, some great insights over the years. Lots of my friends tend to write for them. So, you know, for a while I had a lot of respect for them and for the things that they wrote. They were a little snobby and a little elitist and a little too concerned with looking to the past, thinking that will revive Catholic literature. But by and large, you know, they have had some great stuff. For example, they just had an article on a Protestant philosopher who I really admire, Alvin Plantinga, who retired from Notre Dame a few years ago. And he is considered one of the premier philosophical minds in the last few generations. I mean, not just among Catholics and Christians, because he's not actually a Catholic, just in general, he's considered one of the best philosophical minds around. But if you go to the First Things website and you type in Pope Francis, you look at the articles that they've printed lately, and it's amazing how they bought into the Pope Francis conspiracy theory. And even the one article on here, Thanks for Everything, Pope Francis, by James Zacchaeus, is sort of a little backslap at Pope Francis of, you know, this whole thing about the family and divorce and all the conversation that's been going on with there. And there's really nothing good about it. And the worst one I saw was Burying Benedict by Matthew Schmitz. It's a terrible article. I'll just say it flat out. It's a terrible article. It's poorly written. It's poorly researched. And it certainly wants to pit, of course, Pope Benedict against Pope Francis. Here's the problem. There is no conflict between the two. Pope Benedict and St. John Paul, Pope Francis is not saying anything much different than those two popes did. And I personally love Benedict. I think he's one of the top theological minds in the Catholic Church that we've had in a long time. But to put him in contrast to Pope Francis, and certainly they disagreed on certain points. I mean, again, the church is not perfect. Popes are not perfect, and they're going to disagree with each other. But to put them against each other just seems to be ridiculous. And it just goes to show where First Things has just jumped the shark. And they deserve to be put on the same rack as News for the World. And it doesn't mean they still don't have some decent articles. Like I said, the article on Plantinga is quite good. But the rest of the, you know, this whole Pope Francis conspiracy theory thing is completely manufactured out of American Catholicism. Everyone else in the world, every other Catholic in the world, pretty much loves Pope Francis and what he's doing. But it's the American political system that has generated this conspiracy theory. And frankly, let's be honest, conspiracy theories are almost a uniquely American phenomenon, at least as far as making them up. We love to make up conspiracy theories. It's like the national sport. Baseball used to be the pastime. Well, now it's conspiracy theories. And unfortunately, American nut jobs have decided to fall into this line where they just come up with this stuff that sounds intelligent because these folks can write and they are mildly intelligent people. Well, quite intelligent people, honestly. But that's what makes it so dangerous, right? When people who are intelligent start believing this crap, we're in trouble because they can make it sound intelligent. When in actuality, it's not any more intelligent than News for the World on the supermarket stand. So, you know, sorry, First Things, you jumped the shark, and it's, I don't know, maybe you don't care, but you kind of lost the respect, I think, of this sick pilgrim anyway. And I can hear Jess having a heart attack as she lists this, but it just, I've had enough of what First Things does. It's aggravating. Well, let's go to the positive side of things. The Trying to Say God conference on June 22nd through the 24th. Now, how did this conference start? Well, Jess and I went to the Festival of Faith and Writing, and it turns out Ken Garcia from Notre Dame went as well. And we, you know, the Festival of Faith and Writing is at Calvin College. It's a Protestant college in Michigan. And it's the conference was so well done. And it was writers and readers and all these people coming together to celebrate books and to have talks and to not only listen to panel discussions and great speakers, but also to have coffee together with these speakers to sit and talk about the things that they discussed in their panel and, just having these all little side conversations around. And Jess and I were wondering, why can't Catholics do this? What's going on that we can't do this sort of thing? We have all these major college and universities where this can happen. And in response to that, Jess posts an article by Kaya Oakes where she laments what most Catholic writer conferences turn into, which is basically a funeral lamentation for the dead. Now, that's not an exact quote from her, but that's sort of the idea. And the reason is that, you know, when Catholic writers and scholars get together, they're always talking about Flannery O'Connor or Walker Percy or J.R.R. Tolkien. Now, if those people are all friends, are just amazing people and amazing writers. And I wanted to say friends of mine, but, you know, as a Catholic, that makes theological sense, right? Because, you know, they're right next door to us. But they're, you know, they're writers who heavily influenced my own writing and Jess's writing and a lot of the writers that we know. But sometimes when you're at a Catholic conference, writers conference, you feel like that we're just giving eulogies for the dead all of the time. And we wanted to Kaya's point was we need to have, there are Catholic writers out there, women and minorities and people who are doing great Catholic writing, who are committed Catholics. But we don't hear about them enough, and we don't encourage them enough, and we don't develop them enough. So Ken Garcia jumped on to this conversation on Jess's Facebook wall, which is social media can be a beautiful and powerful thing. And I was living in South Bend, Notre Dame, working on the campus of Notre Dame at the time. At Ave Maria Press, I was working as an editor, and I message Ken and said, hey, we're right across the pond from each other. Let me walk over and have lunch someday and talk about this. So he said, great. So at that lunch meeting, we decided, he's like, I've got money. In which, to throw a conference like this, you kind of need money. It's really important to pay speakers, to pay travelers. And I think you can't just do that. To raise this kind of money to make this conference go would be impossible for Jess and I in the state of our lives right now. It just wouldn't work. So Ken's basically comes to us. He works for Notre Dame. He has access to money to develop these sort of things. And so it was just like a perfect storm of God's providence is the only way I can describe it. And so it kind of all came together. And so that's what happened. We had just come down along with Dave Griffith, and we came down and we all had a meeting together. It was Sam Rocha from Pathos, and we had this meeting, this powwow of how is this conference going to look? What is it going to look like? And the Trying to Say God conference came together, and we ended up getting some amazing speakers. And I'm going to talk about a few of them tonight, and then Jess, who is not going to be able to make it tonight, we're going to talk about some of the other speakers as when she gets on next week. But the speakers that I want to talk about that our main headliner speakers are Mary Carr, extremely intelligent, well-written New York Times bestseller, who became a Catholic. As she describes it herself, it's the oddest, strangest thing that I would ever become a Catholic, but she did. And her story is widely known, and she's featured on NPR all of the time. And so she is our headliner for obvious reasons. And so we're excited. I'm actually excited to meet her, but I'll let Jess tell more about her next week. Bishop Daniel Flores is the Bishop of Brownsville, Texas. Now, Bishop Flores is one of the youngest bishops ever appointed in American history, and for good reason. Bishop Flores is well-read. He's intelligent. But he's also a great pop culture geek. I mean, I get to introduce him. He's our opening speaker for the conference. He's going to talk about the church and the arts and how the church needs writers to be a part of its life, which is going to be a phenomenal talk, I believe. But I love Bishop Flores for his pastoral life and his intelligence. And, you read, he did an interview with the New York Times about a year, 2 years ago. And he was talking about the things that he was reading, and he was talking about some of the serious stuff. And then he was talking about Jim Butcher's magician urban fantasy series that he was reading as well. So here's a bishop who can read that, and he can read this complicated theological stuff and put it all together. And that sort of man is my hero. I love when people can do that, especially bishops and the stand-in for the apostles in the church. And there, what I love, his Instagram feed is called Amigo de Frodo, which is means friend of Frodo, right? Which tells you that he's a huge Tolkien geek. But last week he had this great picture on his Instagram feed, holding a lightsaber, and a confirmation class standing behind him. Now, if you're not familiar with Catholicism, confirmations, the bishop has to go to the individual churches to confirm people, unless he decides to give a priest authority to do so. But usually it's the bishop who does it. And so every spring, usually a priest has to make the rounds of the churches in his, or the parishes in his diocese, to confirm every single, usually junior high school kid, although he certainly does adult confirmations, of course, as well. But so he comes and he does this. So this particular confirmation class, I'm not sure where it was in Texas, but they gave him a lightsaber. So the pictures, all the kids are standing behind him smiling and laughing, and he's standing in his bishop robes holding a lightsaber. It's the greatest picture ever. But and there's been some whispering around too about him, about many people believe that he's gonna be a cardinal soon, and maybe even the next pope, if America ever has a shot of electing a pope. Maybe it's Bishop Flores, who knows, but I'm excited to meet him. Heather King will be there as well. I'm going to let Jess talk about her when she comes on. And, Brother Guy, who is, he is the head of the Vatican Observatory. He's known as the Pope's astronomer. He's a science fiction geek. He's been on Colbert. He's been on a number of different other talk shows. He's going to speak at the World Fantasy Convention before he comes to our conference. So Brother Guy is just, he's one of those, he's a Jesuit brother, and he's one of the most relatable down-to-earth guys. I mean, he's written a book called Would I Baptize a Extraterrestrial? And he is just relatable. He's engaging. He's funny as a speaker. His eyebrows are epic. He's got these wizard eyebrows, and he really is kind of a wizard. He's got this great beard as well. But he's just a great speaker, down-to-earth guy. I've had the pleasure of talking to him face-to-face and by email, and not only is he smart, again, he's one of those people who can talk about science fiction and fantasy, and he is a huge geek, which is great. And theology and astronomy all in the same breath, which is just impressive to me. And I love hearing him talk and speak. But the other aspect of him speaking is Tim Powers. Now, a lot of Catholics may not be familiar with Tim Powers because he's kind of stayed out of the Catholic limelight, and he's more widely known in bigger sci-fi fantasy, urban fantasy circles. His first claim to fame is that he is the founder, one of the fathers of the genre steampunk. He and his friends in college decided to just come up with this genre of literature that was based on, you know, cyberpunk, and they decided to call it steampunk. Now, if you don't know what steampunk is, it's kind of set in the late 1900s, so it's, you know, it's got all the steam machinery and the Victorian dress, and there's a big fandom. If you go to a Comic-Con, and I've been to quite a few, actually, you'll see a lot of steampunk booths and people dressed up as steampunks with these awesome hats and the big goggles and that sort of thing. It's fantastic. If we're going to be huge geeks about something, steampunk might be there. But also, he's heavily influenced. In the way I've first discovered Tim's work, he was heavily influenced by the Inkling Charles Williams, who's one of my absolute favorite writers of all time. But he's kind of the unknown Inkling. He's, you know, when you stand in the shadow of C.S. Lewis and J.R. Tolkien, you kind of get left behind. But also because Williams's novels are, frankly, just a little strange. That's all I'm going to say. I call them weird fiction, and that's going to be the title of my talk at the conference. But Charles's work is definitely along those lines, and Tim Powers certainly has been more than open about his Williams' influence on his own work, but also his Catholicism. So the last night of the conference, on my birthday, actually, June 24th, which is going to be one of the best birthdays I've ever spent, other than opening a 80-year-old bottle of bourbon on my 40th birthday, which was pretty great too. But this one will actually go on longer. And it's going to be this great panel discussion to end the conference with Brother Guy and Tim and I talking about science fiction and fantasy and Catholicism and what the future might look like with those kind of writers in the church. Now, I can't say this for 100% fact, but I'm pretty sure that no Catholic writer conference ever has ever had that sort of discussion at the end. It's sort of the place of honor at a conference. And we decided to take that risk because Mary Carr could only go on the first night. And so we decided to end it with a risky venture because we want to encourage all kinds of writers at this conference. We want to get our poets back into more of the mainstream because poetry's, a lot of folks don't read poetry, and that's a shame. They should. And there are a lot of amazing poets out there, especially now. Our big headline poet who's coming is Natalie Diaz, who I'm very excited to meet. And, you know, we have nonfiction folks coming. We have memoirists coming. We have literary fiction writers coming, and people like myself who have written genre fiction, paranormal fiction, mystery fiction. I mean, it's just going to run across the board. And this is why I'm so excited about this conference, because it's really going to take the notion of trying to find a Catholic writing future seriously and encourage writers moving forward. And we're hoping to start engaging readers for the next time we host this conference to get more readers there, to get more people involved. And we're blown away by the registrations. We did not expect. We've doubled what we expected on our registration, which is fantastic. Our numbers for a first-time conference that we've organized in less than a year has blown us away. We did not expect. And it sounds like humble bragging a little bit. And it's not humble bragging. It's just bragging. Let's be honest. But it's just going to be an exciting gathering of people and ideas and things that issues that don't often get talked about in the wider Catholic world or even in Catholic academia. As much as we love both of those worlds, we want to start a new conversation. And I think that is what makes it so exciting. As we'll continue to talk about it in our next episode, we'll talk about it sort of a follow-up, a wrap-up. It'll kind of be the focus of our first few episodes because we think it's a big deal, not because we started it, although, you know, to be honest, that certainly does, it doesn't hurt. We do like starting these sort of things. But more importantly than any of that is the fact that we hope this will start a wider conversation, not just at the conference, but in other Catholic circles in colleges and writing programs and writing circles and everywhere that writers can be found who are practicing Catholics, and not just practicing Catholics, people who have a Catholic sensibility and a sacramental sensibility to their writing. We want to appeal to those folks as well. So that's our show for this evening. I want to thank all of you for listening. Be patient with us as we figure out this new platform, as Breadbox moves over into podcasting exclusively, and as we figure out the nuts and bolts, and as Sick Pilgrim moves forward, as we figure out how to do this show properly, and we'll be adding things as we go along and maybe subtracting things that are dumb and just don't work. So just stick with us as you continue to listen. Please share us and tell your friends about us. You can check us out on all of our social media platforms, our blog, on Pathios.com, the thing that started all of this Sick Pilgrim business, and our book. Justin and I wrote a book together about our journey back into the Catholic Church. It's called Strange Journey, and it comes out this fall from Loyola Press. It's scheduled to come out on All Saints Day, which is November 1st. All Souls Day. See, I keep mixing up November 1st and November 2nd. November 1st is All Souls Day, and that is when the book is scheduled to come out from Loyola Press. We just have finished up the final edits for it, Lord willing. And now hopefully we'll get some good endorsements in the whole publishing business. And as we go out maybe on a little bit of a book tour this fall, which actually that's might be starting in my parish, because my parish is actually going to throw this huge book launch party for us in Indianapolis, which is fantastic. I'm very excited about that. But consider looking at all our social media platforms as Sick Pilgrim. You can find us pretty easily that way. And also ask that you consider becoming a friend of the show. If you go to Breadbox Media and friend of the show and look for the Sick Pilgrim Traveling Medicine Show, you can click on that little button that says friend of the show, right? Pretty simple on that one. Click on that and help support us as we continue this work. Now, of course, Justin and I do have day jobs and we're writing and all that sort of thing, but we want to keep doing the podcasting. We want to get into this as another part of what we're doing with the blog, with our online community, all of those things. So if you could help support us with that, that would be great. And if you're interested in advertising or you want to drop us a line at the show, you can email me, Jonathan Ryan, at authorjryan@gmail.com with any questions, comments, dislikes. I'm sure after that first things ran, I'm going to hear quite a lot of emails, and maybe we'll even read some of them on future shows. And I can almost hear Alex, our producer, chuckling behind the scenes as he listens to that one. Please consider us supporting us and supporting Breadbox Media, support all the other folks on Breadbox, who all of us are doing this because we believe in and kind of giving you sort of an alternative Catholic media. We are the alternative Catholic news media. I guess that's the only way to put us. You know, you see the alternative newspapers in, you know, cities around the country. Well, we're the alternative Catholic podcasting, Catholic voices, and we try to speak honestly from our sincere commitment to being Catholics and loving Christ and going to Eucharist and being involved in our parishes, believe it or not. I mean, I'm a pastoral associate at my parish, believe it or not, which might get me in trouble later on. If my priest listens to this, I hope he doesn't. Anyway, well, I don't know. Maybe he likes. I don't know. You never know with fathers sometimes. But I think we want to start this conversation in parishes as well as to what sick pilgrims are, because sick pilgrims can be found anywhere. They're not just artists. They can be moms who are at the end of their rope. They can be dads who feel like they can't support their families and don't know what it means to be a real man while still being a sensitive man and realizing that some of the ways that men were men before were not Christian ideas and not Christian ways to treat women, and figuring out how to be men in the culture and the society, godly men who are not the men of the past. And so, you know, it can be teenagers who are struggling with their faith. It can be college students who look successful on, you know, to everyone else, but inside they're literally dying inside and on the verge of committing suicide. It can be a lot of different things. And so if any of that is you, this is your podcast. This is your place. We are sick pilgrims for a reason, because we're all residents of the hospital under the same master physician. So until next week, sickies, ramble on.
Listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.